I know we've already done a moment of silence, but George was someone who, when I first came into the organization, was very instrumental in helping me to understand the needs of the retirees. And I would say the needs of the retirees in California really are not that different than the needs of the retirees in Washington. But George and I had numerous conversations, and since then, obviously, we've had conversations with Mr. Brody as well. So we at CalPERS are really about people. Every decision that we make at CalPERS is focused on all of you, the members, the retirees, to make sure that we have the ability to pay the benefits that you've earned through your public service careers. These are honorable professions, and at the end of your career, you should feel that the benefit that you've earned is reliable, it's safe, and you can count on it for your own payments. So we have 1.9 million members. That means we are the largest public pension system in the United States. We get a lot of attention because of that status of being the largest. But in my opinion, being the largest doesn't mean much if you're not constantly seeking to do your best and to do better every day. We have almost 3,000 public employers who participate in the plans. And here in this state, which is a little bit different than the state I came from, you can, as an employer, you can actually terminate your contract with CalPERS. You can come in and out of the system. And there's been some coverage around civic loyalty, which I'd be happy to take some questions on at the end if you'd like to talk about employee termination. But it's a rare incident instance when that happens here in California. That it is something that we pay close attention to. The health of our employers is paramount to the sustainability of this system. So schools obviously are our largest group, and I spoke to 2,000 CSEA members not too long ago, and I think their needs are very similar to the needs that you all have and the interests that you have as well. So we believe in retirement security, and to us, retirement security means defined benefit plans. Now you see a lot of coverage around the United States. You've seen the erosion of defined benefit plans in the private sector. One thing that CalPERS firmly stands on is the need for a defined benefit retirement plan as a means to dignity in retirement. It's the only way that people can feel financial security as they continue to age. And when you blend your pension benefit and your health benefit, those are the two most critical parts as you go through your retirement. So a little bit about me, just to show you, or to give you a little bit of background on who this person is that's overseeing the trust fund. I came out of the state of Washington. I spent 30 years at the state of Washington. I started out as a clerk typist in 1985, and I worked my way through the system. I was fortunate enough to work for a civil service entity that valued people's contributions, their intelligence, and their work. And I was able to move my way through a clerk typist position to being appointed by the incoming governor of the state of Washington, a gentleman named Arthur Inslee, who's still the governor there today, to be his office cabinet and to run the Department of Retirement Systems. A part of that role meant that I also sat on the Washington State Investment Board. That board obviously oversees a much smaller trust fund than we have at CalPERS. It's about $100 billion in Washington versus $360 billion here in the state of California. But very similar challenges and very similar questions that often arise. I also sat on the Pension Funding Council, which was how decisions were made about how to fund the system, i.e. that would be the actuarial assumptions, both for demographics and for the economic side. I grew up in a very small town. How many of you have heard of Forks, Washington, or great, or have read the Twilight series or watched the Twilight movies? So for those of you who remember those stories, those were set in Forks, Washington, and the author just Googled the rainiest or wettest place in the United States, and Forks, Washington came up. And so that's where I grew up, and my values are very small-town values. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents when I was growing up. My grandparents did not have access to a defined benefit plan. They did not have an employer-sponsored retirement plan. They were excellent savers, but it only took one or two financial incidents and they ran out of money. And they tried to live on Social Security thereafter. So that dignified retirement that I talked about no longer was an option to my grandparents. And that's the personal alignment Capital to working at CalPERS as well as to the system in which I left 2 years ago. It's been a quick 2 years. And also, just so you know, we get a lot of critique about the $100,000 club. You know, how many CalPERS retirees are receiving $100,000? I think I asked, right? How many people in this room that I apply to? It's a very, very small number, about 3% of the pensioners actually earn greater than $100,000. My math is So 64% receive less than $3,000 a month. That's probably more where many of the groups fall into. And then the average allowance for retirement benefit allowances for our term, our internal term, is a fairly specific number here, but about $2,876 per month. And as we all know, you're not going to get wealthy on $2,876 per month. And I think that is a fair exchange for the public service careers that our retirees have. So one of the primary health indicators of a pension fund is what we call the funded status. And the funded status is essentially, in today's dollars, what is the percentage of assets that we have to pay for the pension benefits. And when I came in 2 years ago, that number was 64%. And I remember walking in, and the organization was very concerned about another market downturn, a significant market downturn that happened in 2008 and 2009. And if you're a 64% funded status system, the last thing you want to do is get closer to that 50% mark. There are many experts in this field who would tell you that that's more of a kind of death spiral. We can't get down there. And so what that does really is limit our ability to take on some risks. But even if we wanted to take more market risk, we have to be considerate and thoughtful about the funded status. Now, the good news is that number is moving up. It's moved up to 71% today. The evaluations that will be going out to our employers reflect 71%. And the 71% is at a 7% discount rate. And I'll tell you why that's important here in a minute. So there are three areas in which we will stay focused on over the next 3 to 5 years. We have to keep tackling the financial challenges. We know that our employers are coming to us on a more regular basis. They're coming to the board itself, expressing their concern about the affordability of the system. So we need to help the employers find other tools and other mechanisms that makes the contributions easier for them to make. And there was a piece of legislation, I don't know if the panel will talk about it today, but there was a piece of legislation that's headed to the governor for signature called the 115 Trust. And what that does is it allows for employers to pre-fund some of their pension contributions through CalPERS, a trust that CalPERS would set up. Many employers are doing this today. About 600 of our employers are doing this today on the medical side. It's called a CERBIT. But basically, they have a way of pre-funding their OPEB liabilities through CalPERS. And this would allow them to do the same thing on their pension obligations. The other is we want to make sure that we're operating the organization as efficiently as possible. As we're out talking with the employers and we're asking the employers to contribute more, because that's what it takes to fund the benefits, we also know that we have to pay attention to the cost at CalPERS. So in our 5-year strategic plan, which was approved by the board, the staff are expected to take a 1.5 to 2% operational efficiency cut every year for 5 years. And so we are actively working on that. We will be reporting our results out to the board here shortly. And then sound investing. This is one where, if you think about the levers of the pension system, you have the investment lever, you have the contribution rates, and you have the benefits. The one lever that CalPERS has complete control over is the investing. So sound investing means it's multifaceted, right? So we need to have broad access to funds. So you probably have heard us weigh in on divestment issues, and we can talk about that too, of why we take the position that we do on divestments. But we have to have broad access to the markets. 7% return hurdle over a 20-year period of time is not an easy feat. That is a very difficult number to accomplish. Now, we've been able to do that for the last 2 years. The markets have been friendly to us. But I think everyone knows that if the markets will adjust at some point, it's trying to figure out when that point might be. But we are focused on it, and I'll just give you a quick update. Our chief investment officer, a gentleman named Tim Wallace, announced recently that he was relocating to the East Coast. He is following his family out to New York, which means we've been recruiting for a chief investment officer. And we should be able, if all things go as they have been, we should be able to announce our chief investment officer here within the next month or so. This will be someone who I think you will enjoy the profile of this candidate. This is someone who is recognized as an investor, a very successful investor, and someone who's managed a very large, assets under management, very large number there. So you'll see that the profile of this individual matches everything that we've been hearing from both the employers, the member associations, and the retiree associations, that we have to get focused on investment returns. So here are some decisions, some financial decisions that had to be made, and these were, I would say, these are very difficult decisions that have been made over the last 2 years, but they were absolutely the right decisions to make the system much more sustainable and also improve a lot of the liquidity position. Understanding that we might go into a downturn, we want to have as much liquidity as possible so that we're not selling assets at the wrong time. So investments, obviously, are key to our long-term success. We really do try not to pay too much attention to short-term returns. That can really motivate bad behavior if we pay close attention to the short-term. What we want to do is watch over the long-term and make sure that all of the assets and how we're deploying those assets reflect the fact that we're paying benefits for a very long period of time as well. So our goal is to look at the risks associated with investing at CalPERS or any other institutional investor and make sure we factor those risks into the return profile. So we know that if we're going to tie up our money, that we're going to have a return on that investment, that, you know, that money is not available to us for other things. Someone else is using it, like a private equity general partner, and we want to make sure that we're getting a return on that illiquidity or illiquidity. So we do a comprehensive process every 4 years. We look at not only the actuarial assumptions that go into funding the plan, so how were the demographics, how did the experience study of the plan play out to what we had assumed? We do that every 4 years, and at the same time we look at asset allocation. Asset allocation is simply how do we deploy money into the various classes in the market. So how much do we put in global equity? How much do we put in private equity? How much do we put in real estate infrastructure? And we do that again every 4 years, but we're coming up on our two-year mid-cycle review. Then lowering the discount rate. I walked in October of 2016, and this was the first decision that I had the opportunity to work on. Now, thankfully, what that meant is I got to meet a lot of people really quickly. This was not necessarily the most popular decision that had to be made, but I think at the end of it, as we work through the why, we work through the facts and the data, everyone understood why the 7.5% assumed rate of return is too high, and that we needed to move that down to something that was a little bit more realistic and also affordable. That's the balance that we're trying to attain here. So over a three-year period of time, we're moving it from 7.5 down to 7, which back to the 71% funded status. We went ahead and took the funded status calculation based on the destination discount rate of 7%. So we are improving, we are transparent about what this number means, and we're providing that number out to the public. New asset allocation, I'll spend a lot of time there, that you can see the numbers. And then the other decision, again, that was pretty difficult for our employers was we shortened the amortization period. And really what that means is you look at what's called the unfunded actuarial liability. So when I say we're 71% funded and we want to be 100% funded, the difference is this unfunded actuarial liability. What we had for the employers is we had what was called negative amortization, where the payments were not enough to pay down the funds. We weren't even able to keep up with the 7% interest we charged. So we lowered that amortization from 30 to 20, and we're still working with the employers who want to have what's called a hardship policy. So what happens if I can't afford to move from this 30 to 20? What can CalPERS do for me? What can we work on together that for a period of time we may have to go up to 30, understanding and realizing that negative amortization may occur, but in the short run, they're better with that, and we've been able to work with the employers, and I think we have a policy coming forward to the board for the next couple of months. So I talked about this a little bit. We are doing our part. Part of it is looking at efficiencies within the organization. We have 2,800 employees at CalPERS spread around the state. We have 8 service locations. Many of you had an opportunity to interact with our team at what we'll call those CBs, the benefit education events. How many of you attended a CB before you retired? That's a number of you. Yeah, great. I think, you know, the number one question, I started going out to the CBs, the number one question I get at those events is whether or not it's safe. That, you know, there's this fear of the Supreme Court decisions, this fear that with the JPA San Gabriel and civic loyalty and that, and it was going to do that. And, you know, my job is to reassure them that our eye is on the ball, because every 1% is the ball, and our eye is there. But your benefit is safe. And you can sense this relief that happens in the room when you say that word. So pass the word, you know, help your upcoming retirees to understand. I was having a conversation about perhaps another breakout session at these CBs would be to bring in some of your retirees to walk through with the active members who are getting ready to retire. What did you think you knew, you didn't know, and what have you learned since? And really have a workshop to help the incoming retirees to understand everything that you have already learned. So we'll be reaching out to you on that kind of box here in the room too, and that's the programs he manages. I think here's another little myth buster. Many, you know, people don't understand how a pension benefit is funded. 61 cents of your benefit on dollar is done through investment returns. And obviously the rest is based on contributions 26 from the CalPERS employers and 13 cents from the members. But by far, the benefit that you receive is done through this economic engine of investing. And that's why that investment layer is so critical and so important to the health of the system. 2/3 of your benefit is based on investment return. So investment earnings, this is where, you know, we stand today. We're in a very good place to focus on investments. Again, this is one of the things we have complete control over. We've had significant asset growth in the last fiscal year, almost hitting $360 million. We have improving returns. Like I said, the last 2 years have exceeded that 7% return hurdle, but we know the markets are volatile. And it is why our entire investment office has to be focused on returns, has to be focused on risk, and has to be focused on being the best people possible. We believe that output comes from the people you're able to hire, that many of the markets have been normalized, and we have to find the best deals, the best people, in order to hit that 7% return target. And as I indicated, the incoming CIO understands this. He spoke about this very clearly. And I'll give JJ a little shout out here, because I met this individual through Mr. Jelensic. So as we look to the future around investing, a lot of you have heard of artificial intelligence and the potential for disruption, technology disruption. We did a panel on this at our offsite. It's something our board is keenly interested in, and how does that impact investing in the future? Again, we're long-term, we're not short-term. These are long-term issues that we need to face. There are accelerating changes in this area. And in order, again, to achieve our long-term goals, we have to think differently. We have to think differently than we have in the last 10 years. The last 10 years don't get us our 7% return target. So we have to think differently in the next 10 years. So I think I should also talk about, I think you may have seen some of coverage on this. I know our board has been getting a number of updates from my team, as well as having some offsite speakers on what we call CalPERS Direct. And CalPERS Direct, along with the other two pillars in what we're calling our new private equity strategy, the first pillar is really around our emerging manager program. It's reaffirming our investment and our interest and our belief in our emerging manager program and helping these emerging managers get into larger institutions where we have an early relationship with them that will continue into a very profitable one into the future. The pillar two is really around how we co-invest, and there's an article where CalSTRS announced their co-invest strategy. strategy and is not defined in the loan offers. We'd be asking its board to move forward with. They chose a firm called AlpInvest to help them with their strategy. They're not calling it Pillar 2 like we are, but we think we have given them an idea. And then Pillars 3 and 4, CalPERS Direct, is the innovation, and that's where we would be investing in what we call late stage venture in tech and health sciences. You may have seen some of the coverage on this, but we really believe that even then there's a barrier to entry into Silicon Valley from most of the financial system in California. And that is really unfortunate because it's in our own backyard. And so this would allow us an opportunity to get into tech and health science, and not just in Silicon Valley, but certainly that would be a good ground for us. And then CalPERS Direct Horizon is the long-term investments, and this is really around the core economy. And I think some of the questions that have come up, that it would be remiss of it if we would say that, but I think some of the concerns and the questions are for these two models in particular, is that they would have a different board, they would have a different governance structure than the CalPERS board. And the CalPERS board needs to pay close attention to that. They have governing authority today over the $360 billion. And if we were to take 10% of the portfolio and basically give it to two other governing bodies, of course, it would be an alignment of interest with CalPERS. That would be absolutely required. But you have to ask a lot of questions about whether that's the right decision to make. These are fiduciaries of the fund, and they are ultimately accountable for the decisions that happen at CalPERS. So we are not yet ready to take the governmental decision back to our board. That likely will happen after the first of the year. And I think it's imperative that we get the new CIO on board first to be able to walk through our own board their views on these models. So I talked about the models. These are the four emerging managers. The co-invest is really the partnership model, and then the two, what we call CalPERS Direct, on innovation and Horizon. So we are doing everything we can, obviously, to help our members through education and resources. Not only are we the largest public pension plan, we are also the most complex public pension plan, which means for all of you, we need to go through the processes at CalPERS for retirement or understanding your health benefits and your pension benefits. It's very complicated. And so we do everything we can. We are completely focused on the member. That is the reason we're here. There is no other reason for us to be here than to be focused on you. We have regional offices that take appointments. You can go and meet directly with subject matter experts if you have questions. The team is happy to help you. It is really a wonderful organization. The people are very dedicated. We get high marks on destination employer. And I spend a lot of time with the team talking with them about what they like about CalPERS. And then usually the number one response they get is the learning and development opportunities and the alignment to the mission. They really like working with the members of the system. So one last note for those of you who have CalPERS health benefits, the enrollment period starts on September 10th, and you'll have until October 5th to make any changes for the 2019 plan year. You can find everything you need either on site on our website, or we actually have a new web experience where you can, we're not officially calling it an app, but it is a new online experience that you can access from your phone. It allows you to do everything on your phone that you would do in my CalPERS website. So we encourage you to try it out, see what you think, and give us some feedback. If it works, we would certainly like to bring more of our services through that channel that you, I think most of us carry around a cell phone with us, to have full access to much of our CalPERS does through that channel. We have heard from our retirees as well as our members that would be beneficial to you. So with that, I'll close. And again, thank you very much for allowing me to give you a quick update on what's happening at CalPERS and the plan really for the next 3 to 5 years.
Marcy, we have time for just a couple of questions. If someone wants to come to the mic and ask a question, otherwise I will bring a mic and Rosemary will bring a mic on the other side.
Andrew Marcy, I
for settlement. I know there's been some confusion about that. But how the settlement gets paid, it's a question that has come up in the litigation. And, you know, does it cause a premium increase? How does that ensure the amount of the long-term care fund? So really, you know, the payment, if there is a settlement that happens, so what is the payment source? And that, you know, that is a question. I don't have an answer to that to you today, but understanding that those are questions that we're dealing with right now as a part of the litigation. Sorry, I can't be more detailed on that.
Yeah, the mic, Bill.
Yeah, I got a question about public employees from agencies rather than from the state of California. And I'm retiring from the city. My concern is that the governor seems to keep pouring money into CalPERS to assist the state retirees, that's good. But I don't see anybody pouring money in on our side, and I'm a little concerned about what's going on with the public agencies that are going to. How many, I don't know if you know offhand, but how much of your retirees are from the public agencies not in the California state? And what are we doing to assist them? Because they're getting nervous out there. We all know, everybody that worked for a city or JPA or whatever is kind of concerned about that.
Yeah, thank you for that question. We've been spending quite a bit of time you are correct that the legislature and governor increased the $1 billion because of these laws. It was extremely helpful. We said thank you. But this is a difficult process to have, just and you live that with the market returns, the discount rate reduction, and the amortization change. The system is in a really solid, viable liquidity position when the downturn happens. So those are really great things. But it didn't do much, as you said, for the other public employers in the system. So the 115 trust is intended to help with that. That would be a tool for those who have, and we know they all don't have money set aside that they can pre-fund this. But we did hear from several of them that their budgets are likely to be issued today, and they're going to be 5 years from now. So if they could start investing those assets with CalPERS today, take advantage of investment returns to help offset future increases, then that would be very helpful to them as well. Our new CFO, a gentleman named Michael Cohen, who used to be the Governor Brown's Department of Finance Director, so Finance Cabinet. And those are the conversations that we're already having with Mr. Cohen. He doesn't start until October 1, but he has some ideas about how to help employers with some of these financing issues. So our focus not only on the investments, will be on our public employers, because that's part of making sure that all of you as your and the CalPERS is working to make sure that we can make your benefit much more sustainable than many of you are going to do.
Thank you. Roger Clayes, AAD from Butte County. I'm kind of curious about these figures that much people make. I see $2,800, that's an average per month, I assume.
Yeah.
64% are making less than $3,000 per month. And then 3% more are making more than $100,000. Is that a month or a year?
Sorry about that. The number's going to blow up. That would be a month.
President of Chapter 27 in San Diego. And order to be more socially acceptable, with the gold investment from firearms and tobacco, and he said he lost billions of dollars out of that. Are there any current social engineering investment plans that are not also based on return on investment?
So Mr. Johnson is correct. We actually get a report delivered to our board on an annual basis. It's done by an outside consultant, that's Wilshire, who has that today, who comes forward to the board and says, based on divestment decisions that have already been made, here is what's considered the opportunity loss. So if those same funds were left with the same investments, what would have happened to those investments over a period of time? And it is billions. It is 10 or 12 billion, I think, was the last report. So I did say that I've talked about investment and engagement. And I think the most recent item that came up around the investment was, again, the retailers. We had a really difficult board meeting where we had family members of victims of Parkland in Las Vegas and San Bernardino who had come forward to say, we really need you to divest from gun retailers. Right? That's the only way we can see that these companies are going to make the policy changes that are necessary. And what CalPERS firmly believes in, our value system, is that being a very large investor, we have a very loud voice. When we choose to use our loud voice on issues, companies are going to pay attention. So it's more important to us that we engage than it is that we divest. And Mr. Darden has been one of the most outspoken people on that coming to the board and speaking to the board about it, is that we've got to stop this stuff. We have to get focused on investment returns. We need to make sure that we can recruit and retain the right people to do that. And he's been a very loud advocate, not only on the CalPERS board, but he's been out talking to the legislature about it. So that's very helpful. But we firmly believe that engagement is the best way to handle any policy changes that we think are necessary, including most of the gun retailers. Now, many of you know the gun retailers essentially made the policy changes that these student activists were really asking for. So even though CalPERS was engaged, it was really, my opinion, the student activism that caused the gun retailers to change policy. They know that consumer behavior is going to drive stock price, but these are not dumb companies. They know how to make money. And so it's another example of when you get engaged with a company is going to listen to CalPERS, and that's where we need to be spending our time, not on divestment issues. If we have an assumed rate of return, and if you agree with this, if we have an assumed rate of return around 3 or 4%, then we can look at social, more socially responsible, kind of social policies. But it doesn't mean that we can't look at risks related to environmental, climate, social issues, and governance issues. That would not make us as successful as we could be if we ignored those components. We have to factor those components in. But to me, those are more risk components right now than they are return components. And the board is doing that. So the board listening to the stakeholders, and they're talking with one another about this. And you know, there were divestment bills this year in the legislature, and for the most part, I think other than one that I think is sitting on the governor's desk today, which really has some rails on it, some constraints. But it doesn't take the authority away from the CalPERS board to say, no, we are not going to divest from the country. That's the bill that's sitting on the governor's desk. But we talk about this a lot in the hall at the Capitol building, and we've gotten excellent response from the legislators. And this all happened, you know, over the last legislative session. But it takes a village to run CalPERS, and it takes all the stakeholders and the members of the system to help say the same thing. And the most important thing we have to do is pay a benefit.
I would hope that you, my 4 years of work and contributions would be watched over carefully for a good return on investment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcy. My question is related to health care premiums. I read a perspective, and CalPERS was trumpeting some of the lowest premium increases in several years. There's a very short paragraph about CalPERS Select, Choice, and Care, and their rates are going up as much as 40%. I can't quite get my head around why CalPERS sponsored insurance program would have that kind of increase. Can you tell me why?
Yeah, so these benefits, so these are, we have an HMO side, the premiums, you're right, the premiums are going up. They're going up considerably. And the reason premiums go up is really the experience of the plan. We have sicker populations in some of these health plans, which means that the rates are going up. And I would be the first to tell you, and Ms. Brown also put this out to the organization, that she thought we did not communicate that well enough. And we needed to communicate this, even though we have an overall, and we need to be really clear, this is an overall increase of 1.16. There were still plans, and people need to pay very close attention to whether their plan is one of them that had an increase, but we also had several plans who had a decrease. And we have to make sure that we're very clear so that we are not misleading anyone. If someone sees 1.16 increase, you're assuming that that happens in every plan, and that's not the case. And so what we've done since then is make sure that it's in perspective, in our press releases, to make sure that people understand, pay close attention to your health plan, because there is quite a difference between whether you're going to premium increase or a premium decrease. But that, I think that was a good lesson learned for us on how we communicate these rate changes.
Thank you, Marcy. That was a very comprehensive report on what's going on in California. All right, the next order of business is Ministry of